Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
It's Wednesday, the 16th of February, 2022, and you're listening to Reconstruction with David Taylor and Phil Bishop from the Construction Index, discussing some of the construction industry topics that have caught our eye over the past couple of weeks. Actually, Phil, my eyes are a bit sore today. I sat on my glasses on Monday morning, and I've been wearing my reading glasses ever since, and I can barely see anything now. So I think we'd better start by talking about what's caught your eye recently rather than mine.
Okay, morning. Hello. Well, I don't want to talk about this for long, but just as an intro, I don't know how much you read the, particularly in the Sunday papers, they seem to have articles about we're of an age where we're starting to think that we probably aren't going to go on forever, and haven't we got a retirement fund sorted out, and are we going to be able to have to keep working till we're 95, should we live that long? And the common thread that they always ask people about you and your money is do you prefer pensions or property? And most people seem to say, oh, property. I think property is much better than a pension. And I say this only because Legal & General, who are, I think, an insurance company, but a pension company, a pension fund provider, have got gazillion pounds worth of money stashed away that, for investors' pensions and so on. And they announced today that they're putting another $2.5 billion into the build-to-rent property market over the next 5 years.
Ah,
so the whole okay. line, my point simply is that the whole idea that it's either property or pension, well, a lot of our pension money is going into property anyway. So I'm not quite sure how clear the distinction is. I don't know whether if I put my money in, if I've got a Legal & General pension and they're making lots of money from build to rent, whether the cut that they take out of the services that they provide is worth the added value that they might bring over me, if should I be able to, buying my own buy-to-rent property.
So let them do it instead. That's what they do.
Their fees involved, but they're better at it. And they don't sort out all the hassle. So I still don't know what the answer is, whether property or pension is better. But my point is, it doesn't seem to be that black and white.
I'm constantly bamboozled by corporate finance and investments and all the rest of it. I think I know where my money is and how much I've got, but I can't be absolutely sure. But Legal & General, of course, they are the one of the leading players in this particular field. And of course, they don't just invest in property; they build it as well, don't they? Isn't it Legal & General that make prefabricated houses?
Well, I get confused. There's so many different bits of Legal & General. The one this morning was Legal & General Retirement Institutional. Which is part of the group.
Okay.
But there's another bit of Legal & General, which has got a prefab factory. It makes off-the-shelf volumetric houses.
This reminds me, actually, I think there was quite a lot of discussion, because, as you know, the oil and gas companies have been making massive profits, and BP announced multi-billion pound profits just the other week, didn't they? And there were calls, particularly from, I think, the Labour Party particularly, calls for the government to introduce a windfall tax on these profits, because, I mean, it's indecent for a massive organisation that invests in producing fossil fuels, which are, of course, killing the planet. It's indecent for them to make such ridiculously high profits. They ought to spread it out a bit, and we should all share it. But as somebody pointed out, that the people who would benefit most from these massive profits are the shareholders of BP, and most of the major shareholders of BP, and indeed most of the other oil and gas corporations, are in fact pension funds. And so we are all getting a slice of the pie. That was the argument there, that if you got a pension, then you would benefit from BP's massive profits. I have to believe that, because I can't work it out.
And the bigger the profit anyone makes, the more tax they pay on it, unless they're American tech company.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So we want them to make big money. But you touched on the issue of shareholders of big corporations, which brings us on to our first main talking point of the day, mm-hmm. which is, I think it's worth, there's, I think it's quite a lot to talk about this. Taylor Wimpey has got a, they've chosen their next chief executive who takes over in, I'm just trying to look, I think it's in April, after the mm-hmm. after the next AGM. Yes, Jenny Daly, who's currently the Group Operations Director of Taylor Wimpey, becomes chief executive in place of Pete Redfern on the 26th of April. And mm-hmm. this is interesting, not so much because she happens to be a woman, and there aren't many women chief executives of such large companies in the UK. I think we've talked about this before. I'd like to take that for granted, and if we try and make that an issue, then it remains an issue, and it shouldn't be an issue. It should be just, you know,
yes,
someone who's right for the job has got the job. More interesting to me,
yep.
Is the fact that they have quite naturally, the board of Taylor Wimpey have quite naturally, you might think, selected the chief operating officer to become the chief executive, which is a natural stepping stone. And that sounds yeah. eminently sensible. But one of, if not the biggest, I think it's certainly one of the biggest shareholders in Taylor Wimpey, is a US hedge fund called Elliott Advisors. And it's not clear how much they're agitating might have been involved in the departure or the decision by Pete Redfern to stand down after a number of years in the job. 14 years in the job, Pete Redfern had been, mm-hmm. which is a stint. I mean, maybe you know, chief executives of big companies should go up, you know, after 14 years or earlier. But yeah. he's no age. He's got plenty of
life left him.
He got the job at a ridiculously young age and has ostensibly done extraordinarily well there. I think he's very well respected and mm-hmm. his... I think the Labour Party turned to him to write either a policy paper or an advice document or something on the housing market, and he's regarded as a good egg. But Elliott Advisors went public basically saying that, this is what we reported back in December when Pete Redfern handed in his notice, wrote to the board saying the company continues to fall short of achieving the opportunity inherent in the business. In particular, a series of operational and strategic missteps has resulted in persistent share price underperformance, leaving shareholders frustrated and lacking confidence in the company. Now, this is quite hard-hitting stuff, and the fact that they went public with it as well is I mean, how to drag down the price of your own investment, slag it off in public. Anyway, they said at the time that it's essential that they Taylor Wimpey needed to bring in an outsider who with a you know a new perspective, an experienced operator with an established track record. And names which were the press, whether Elliott Advisors actually named these names, but the names that were attached to Elliott's wish list included Crest Nicholson chief executive Peter Truscott, Persimmon former bosses Jeff Fairbairn or Dave Jenkinson, Barrett deputy chief executive Stephen Boyes. They wanted a big name from outside Taylor Wimpey to come in and shake things up and change things. Now, I've mixed feelings about that. On the one hand, if you're a shareholder, you are an owner, a part owner, and in Elliott's case, substantial part owner, and therefore you're entitled to have a say in how your business is run. On the other hand, this is a hedge fund who, this kind of investor who, all such investors are financial speculators. They want to make a quick buck, you know, put money in, make a quick buck, get yes. out. They don't care about the long-term future of the company. They care about what return they can get in maybe 2, maybe 5 years, probably not even 5 years. They want a quick buck. That's the business that they're yeah. in. They're in the money-making business. They're not in the house-building business. And therefore, you kind of feel that the board of Taylor Wimpey, perhaps, although they're there to represent shareholders, that's what their job is, you would hope that they've got more long-term interest in the company.
The thing I find puzzling about it is why they seem to assume that there isn't anybody of sufficient calibre within the organisation already. I mean, obviously, we're talking about Jenny Daly here, who is capable of doing the job. I mean, setting aside Pete Redfern's capabilities or his shortcomings, whatever they might be, the idea that you automatically need to go outside the organisation to get, you know, new blood in seems to me to be lacking in sense. I mean, there's why should they assume that somebody like Jeff Fairbairn, for example, who's very good at making money for himself?
Well, be fair, he made a lot of money for Pacific. He only made a lot of money for himself because he made even more money for shareholders.
Well, that's yes, okay, yeah, fair enough. But I still think there's a bit tone deaf on the part of this this hedge fund in order to say that we need Jeff Fairbairn, for example, to come in and head up the company, because a lot of people out there will only know Jeff Fairbairn because of the embarrassment that he caused. And yeah, okay, yeah, I take your point. Yes, he's obviously very good at doing what he does. But then Jenny Daly is apparently very good at doing what she does as well. And I think that there's a lot to be said for recruiting people from within the organisation, because after all, you know, every organisation, if you ask them what their priorities are, they always say, oh, our people are our main priority. Almost exclusively, they will say, it's our people. We are our people. So why not put your money where your mouth is and say, right, we've got people who we've brought on, and it's their turn to take over. And it's a succession thing, you know. It should be succession. It shouldn't be parachuting somebody in from outside.
I think if any chief executive happens to resign or get run over by a bus and needs replacing, if there is not the best person for that job in the next door room at the time, then that chief executive should have already been sacked. Because I think, and I think it's a great analogy here. With, I know you don't do footy, you don't do football, David, I understand that. But
afraid not.
Alex Ferguson is regarded widely as the greatest manager, football manager, possibly even manager that ever was. 27 years he kept his job, that's possibly the biggest achievement, keeping the job for 27 years in football. And he won 38 trophies in 27 years, including 13 Premier League titles. And on that basis, he'll say, look at his record. No one's got that record. He is the best manager. But I would argue, no, the fact that they've not won anything of substance since actually completely invalidates Alex Ferguson's record. And it proves that he was not a good... He may have been a good manager of players, but he was not a good manager of the club, because there was no one ready to step into his shoes and continue it. They've just gone from pillar to post since, and they're still wobbling around thinking, oh, who should we get, what should we do? Now, contrast that with what happened in Liverpool before Alex Ferguson dominated the football scene in England. Bill Shankly was before Alex Ferguson. Bill Shankly was a famous manager. He won the league. Mm-hmm. He's the one who famously said, football's not a matter of life and death, it's more important than that.
Exactly. It's more important, yeah.
He won the league three times, FA Cup twice and the UEFA Cup in 8, 10 years. He was there quite a long time. And when he retired, he was replaced by the guy from the boot room, the guy sitting in the next door room, Bob Paisley. Bob Paisley was there 9 seasons, and he won 29 trophies in 9 seasons. Hmm. Now, Ferguson may have won 38 trophies, but it took him 27 years to do it. So Bob Paisley, he won the league 6 times in his 9 seasons. And then when he retired in 1983, the guy in the next room, Joe Fagan, also came out of the boot room. He took over from inside, and he became the first manager of an English club to win the treble. European Cup, League Championship and the League Cup. You know, this is succession planning. This is good management, following it through. And then when he retired...
Phil, who's...
Go on, no, I've got one more.
Sorry, you're in full flow. Carry on. I was going to say, who's the England manager now?
Gareth Southgate.
Now, I...
Let me finish on Liverpool. Hang on, you come back to that.
Because yes, okay.
There's more to come here. And then 2 years later, he's taken over by Kenny Dalglish, who also came from the inside. He played for the team for many years. In his 8 seasons, he won the league 6 times, plus the FA Cup, 4 League Cups, 5 Charity Shields, 3 European Cups and 1 European Super Cup. In other words, we had a succession of 4 managers, 3 of them following on from the inside, who just swept all before them in succession. Alex Ferguson leaves Man United... plop, nothing. Now, so that's the point about succession planning, bringing on from within. So we might find that Jenny Daly, is Bob Paisley, and probably not David Moyes.
Ah.
Go on. You want to ask about Gareth Southgate?
Well, no, because the little I know about English football is that Gareth Southgate has actually done quite well. I know that we sort of fell at the last hurdle in the World. Was it the World Cup or the European Cup, wasn't it?
World Cup, I think, wasn't it? I lose track.
I can't remember. You should know. You're the football fan. But anyway, but he's he is highly regarded, isn't he, as an England manager compared to some of his predecessors. But if I remember correctly, they couldn't find a big name to do the job. And so he was taken on as England manager on a sort of interim.
Well, he'd been the under-21s manager, so he was thought of That's the right. guy in the next door room. And he'd done well with the under-21s, and he brought through a lot of those youngsters into the full side.
Yeah.
And that's been the basis of his success, because he was the guy in the next door room.
There you are. I can talk football too. No, I agree with you. I think I really do think that if you're going to run a business, and if you really do believe that the people that you employ are, you know, the future of your business, you've got to stand by that. You've got to bring these people on. You've got to prepare them to pick up the baton and carry on. And I think that's exactly what Pete Redfern's done here. I mean, it wasn't just Pete Redfern. I'm sure that it was the entire board that decided that Jenny Daly was the right person for the job. And I'm sure that they made that decision on solid grounds. And in fact, the chairman of the company, Irene Dorner, I mean, she's extremely complimentary about Jenny Daly and clearly feels that she has the... Did she say she was razor sharp or something like that? She obviously thinks that they've made the right decision. And I think that Jenny Daly should be given the chance to... Well, I'm sure Jenny Daly will be given the chance to prove herself. But I think that she could also prove one or two of her shareholders wrong in this case.
On the flip side of that, where there is a case, and this is Elliot's case, it's the if you always do what you always did, you always get what you always got kind of mantra. That if, as Elliot believes, they need to change direction, something needs to change. If you point a point from within, with someone will probably have the same culture, the same outlook, it becomes like sort of civil. Some people say the problem with the civil service is it's the culture is so strong that it's very hard to change anything, and it's lumpen and massive woolly thinking or whatever. And that occasionally you do need to bring in, like when Arsenal, go back to football, when Arsenal brought in Arsène Wenger, from the French professor who took away the ketchup and all of that stuff. You know, occasionally you need a revolutionary to come in, and that's what Elliot was saying was needed. Now, clearly the Taylor Wimpey board thought, we don't need a revolution here. We're doing okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose I would be better informed if I understood how well or otherwise Taylor Wimpey was doing. I mean, they're still one of the biggest house builders in the country. And I did a sort of in our sector focus in the magazine at the beginning of the year. We looked at house builders.
You're holding it up to viewers, Dave, but they can't see.
Yeah, holding up so I can see it. Still got my reading glasses on. No, I think last year Taylor Wimpey actually were at the top of the league, our league.
By turnover or by profit?
By turnover. This is all
turnover doesn't
rated
mean.
By. No, I know. That is that. You know, what's the saying? Turnover is vanity.
Profit is
sanity, or something like that. But anyway, yeah. But in any case, they're doing a lot of business. They're down to number four now. They're behind Barrett at the top, then Persimmon and Bellway. But they turned over nearly $3 billion last year, down from over $4 billion the year
before. That's COVID year. Everyone would have been down that sort of, imagine that sort of amount, weren't they?
Persimmon were down nearly 9%, but Barrett Developments and Bellway were both up more than 40% on their turnover.
But what financial year are we talking about there? Because if you're financial...
We're talking about the year to June 2021 and for Barrett, and for Bellway it was a year to July 2021.
And for Taylor Wimpey?
For Taylor Wimpey it was the year to the year to December 2020.
Oh, okay. So less...
So that was...
Less... Hang on. I lose chat. 2020 was the COVID year, wasn't it? That was
2020 was a yes.
So the more COVID you've got in your results, the more you'll be down. It depends on you.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But of course, if you look, I mean, I don't want to get too much into the dates and figures here because it's not that meaningful. But July 2021, the construction industry had, you know, got its site operating procedures sorted out, and basically people were up and running again. But, you know, Taylor Wimpey's financial year ending in December 2020, a large chunk of that was during severe lockdowns and site closures. So that would have affected it. But, I mean, yeah, their turnover was down sort of 36%, but their profits were down 68%. Which is quite a big fall. In fact, I think it's not quite the largest fall in profit in our list of 20 house builders, but it's significant anyway. It's one of the largest. So you know, maybe they could do better, but whether or not that means they need to bring in somebody from outside and, you know, just sort of slot them in and hope that they do better, I don't know if that's really necessary. I don't suppose that Jenny Daly is simply going to carry on exactly where Pete Redfern left off. I'm sure she's got her own ideas about how the company should be run. So I think we should just sit back and wait and see what she does.
Well, I suspect that if Taylor Wimpey did suffer a worse reverse in turnover compared to the rest of the sector, it was probably because they were more touchy-feely and caring about their employees than everyone else and said, no, we better not go back there yet, or we better, you know, better not overfull, and some of the more bullish...
Well, that's one explanation.
Some of the more bullish gung-ho developers will go, COVID, schmovid, let's get back out there.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Just a theory.
It's just a theory, but, I mean, there might be something in that. But anyway, I think good luck to Jenny Daly. She's got a strong track record. She's clearly very highly regarded by her colleagues. And, we'll just watch what she does.
This isn't something that's been in the news, but I just wanted to flag up. I got a press release the other day, as did you.
Oh, I think I know, yes.
From a company who, and I'm not going to name them because I don't want to particularly embarrass whoever it is that writes their material, but is announcing a new appointment, a new director looking after this organisation. And I thought, I've never heard of this business. Who's this business? And then I went down to the bottom and I discovered it was a subsidiary of one of our top 20 building companies who I absolutely have heard of. And I thought, oh, I didn't know they had this sort of a subsidiary. I wonder what they do.
Hmm.
Here's what this company does. I'm going to quote. This is a technology-focused business that is revolutionising how the UK construction industry designs, procures, delivers and maintains buildings. Is rapidly expanding its credentials as a trusted specialist. By using digital platforms, it aims to rethink approaches, optimise the project journey, and unlock end-user value, providing progressive and innovative solutions to both current and future industry challenges.
Yeah, I got that. I think I got it on Monday morning, and I don't know how many times I read it through. I just thought it must have been because I'm not up and running yet, but the more I looked at it, the less sense it seemed to make.
Maybe you can read it better, is it?
No, I don't think I can. I think you you could put a lot more emotion into it. But, I mean, the thing is that it doesn't seem to say anything. It also described itself as a technology-led business revolutionising how the UK construction industry designs, procures, delivers and maintains community buildings of superior quality, sustainability and livability.
It's an integrated built environment platform that empowers customers by giving them greater control over their development need. We think that simple is smart.
Yeah, they don't, do they?
Our team is investing in efficient new ways of working to rethink how things are done and ensure we deliver better. And blah, 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 blah. Not a clue.
Well, why do you think this is, Phil? Why do you think it is that people can't put things in plain terms and describe them in simple terms to people? Why do they have to use this sort of obscure sort of obfuscation in order to not tell us what they're up to?
Well, either someone's being paid by the word, or I mean, often the case, I'm sure you have too, sort of as a hack for hire writing stuff, you occasionally get paid by an organisation to write something, and mm-hmm. you write what you think is a perfectly straightforward thing and you want to write, and they'll throw it back and say, oh no, you haven't, there aren't enough adjectives, you haven't told everyone how brilliant we are. And I say, oh god, you want me to write that sort of, and you know, you're paid to write what the client wants you to write.
Well, yeah, exactly, of course, and you do that. But I think I think there's a sort of a, not quite a secret language, but there's a coded language here, that there are certain phrases and words which don't actually necessarily mean anything, but they project an idea, which is usually sort of fairly intangible sort of thing, but people immediately know or think they know what they're getting at. I mean, I actually kept this from years ago because it was the most opaque bit of English I think I've ever read. I can't remember what the company was or what they did, but this is this is how they described what they did. Through value discovery processes, we help...
What?
Whoa.
Start again.
Through value discovery processes, we help reveal systems, enlighten dynamic environments, highlight people's interactions, empower transactions, and provide remedial actions for change and growth. With design thinking approach and other lean techniques, we provoke transformation and value generation. So what do you think they do?
They either make greenhouses or cash point machines.
I don't think they did either of those things. I honestly can't remember what they did. But you see, when you devote that amount of language to something and you still can't get your message across, something's going wrong. But you find this sort of language all over the place.
Who would do business with an organisation that speaks like that? You just say, no, you're not for me, thanks.
No.
It's just, I've got a few words which, whenever I see, if any of these words appear in any material, publicity material or press release that I receive, it's shift-delete pretty much straight away, I'm afraid. Dynamic, values-led, unique, vision... and disruptor.
Oh, yes.
Can I say we're disrupting the... No, you're not. Go away. Disrupting my day.
Yeah. No, they are all dreadful cliches. But again, I think a lot of people maybe think that they have to include those phrases because that marks them out as a modern, progressive organisation with its finger on the pulse. Everybody else is being disruptive, so they need to be as well. And of course, everybody's unique in their own way, so why not throw that in as well? But it doesn't mean anything, doesn't tell you anything.
I think anyone being disrupted should be thrown out of the classroom. Sent to stand in the hall in front of the clock.
Yeah. Well, you and I see an awful lot of marketing speak because, you know, we deal quite a lot with marketing people. And, you know, there are good ones and there are bad ones, just as there are in any other walk of life.
Well, they're the interface between us journos and the construction industry
we're trying to report on. Yes, of course. You know, the lazier ones, I think, are those who sort of dress things up in that sort of language. Maybe it's because they're trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, so they haven't really got an awful lot to say, but they need to make it sound toothsome and delicious, so they use all these fancy buzzwords, throw those in there. People will say, that sounds great, and won't stop to consider what it possibly means.
Just tell us what you do, folks.
Yeah.
If you want to tell us what you do, tell us what you do.
Talking about PR, and of course a lot of this comes through the PR industry. One thing caught my eye. It was a PR firm's website, and it wasn't so much them at all. In fact, it wasn't them at all that caught my eye. It was their website designer. It was a company with the, I think, excellent name of Rubber Cheese. And they describe themselves as a straight-talking design agency whose goal is to make our customers really happy. And I thought, well, they sound a bit tiggerish, sort of a bit like a bouncy spaniel. But maybe that's what you want, you know. And yes, they say what they do, and I think that sounds quite honest. And with a name like Rubber Cheese, you can't go wrong.
But would you choose them, or would you choose Rubber Chicken, who aim to make their company customers really rich?
Yeah. Well, I suppose if you're really rich, you're probably quite happy, aren't you? So, you know, cut to the chase.
No.
We wouldn't know, would we, Phil?
One doesn't follow other. That's what I'm pinning my hopes on anyway.
Yeah. No, I think it's always a good idea to tell it like it is and try and sort of cut
plain
to
English.
The chase. Yeah,
plain English.
Plain English.
This does lead very neatly onto our next topic, companies boasting about themselves, or at least promoting themselves.
Yeah.
I put something, for no particular reason than it was in my head, and I thought, well, let's have a look. And so I put something on the website this morning, Wednesday morning as we speak. What did I headline it? It's not a news story at all. And in fact, I confess, it's almost clickbait. But I think it's interesting. Construction's marketing taglines. Best. You know those tags? I mean, the best ever, you know, slogan or tagline or whatever is, it does what it says on the tin.
Yeah, genius.
That it cannot be beaten. And a lot of construction companies, not all, some of them don't engage in that. They just sort of say, if you go to their website, put the name, says what they do. But a lot of them have got like a strap line underneath the name of the company, a strap line, sort of big letters that's their mission statement or whatever, or their slogan that says what they do. And there's quite a bunch of them. And when I posted them up online, I put them to different categories. Have you had a look at these?
Yeah, very, very enlightening, I thought.
Well, the some really prosaic, which I have absolutely no problem with. Balfour Beatty, we're a leading international infrastructure group.
Can't argue with that.
I'm not going to get excited and go, oh, they must be good. But I know what they do, unlike the companies we were talking about before, who've got absolutely no idea what we do. Tilbury Douglas are very similar. They're not international, but we're a leading UK building infrastructure engineering and fit-out company. Mm-hmm. So they do lots, and it's all construction-related. They simply just say, this is what we do.
Yeah.
Bit like Ron Seal, but not as imaginative, I suppose. And then there's certain buzzwords that people like to bring in, like smart or sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
The smart ones, Costain, improving people's lives with smart infrastructure solutions. Keltbray, slightly snappier, smart engineering solutions.
I prefer the Keltbray one myself. First of all, it's only three words.
I hate the word solutions, though, in this.
Well, yeah, solutions, that's true.
There are no trucking companies anymore. They're only logistics solutions providers.
That's true. Yeah, because we've all got a problem and they've got the solution.
And so, ventilation solution providers, window latches.
So I'm
not keen on solutions. Smart, I don't mind. A bit smart, whatever.
Yeah.
Sustainable is another big buzzword that people like.
Yeah.
Kia, our purpose is to sustainably deliver infrastructure which is vital to the UK. No problem with that split infinitive, because I don't mind split infinitives.
It always grates with me. It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
It is, but vital, sustainable, infrastructure, purpose. There's some strong words in there. Arup's is a bit, over Arup. I mean, you'd expect them to be a bit huggy. Creating sustainable futures.
I don't like it.
Creating futures, that, you know, pork belly futures on the speculating financial markets or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And a similar sort of bit like Arup one is the Arcadis one. Improving quality of life.
Yeah, that's no not idea what they enough,
do. I think they had something to do with the NHS, aren't they?
Yeah. But you know, I think bread probably improves the quality of life. Does for me anyway. I'd notice the lack. I wouldn't say that I'd notice the lack of Arcadis, but anyway, yeah, this is interesting. The one I like the most, because I think it's the least likable in a way, is MACE, to redefine the boundaries of ambition, which is just totally bumptious, isn't it? It's
When you say you like it, in what sense do you like it?
Well, I like it because if I wanted to quote somebody a really crappy slogan, that's the one I would probably choose.
Oh, you like it in the sense that I understand.
I think what I mean is I think it probably takes the prize. I mean, if MACE really believes that they can redefine the boundaries of ambition, then, you know, they need a reality check, I think. So that doesn't mean anything, and it's too arrogant. So I don't like that one. I do like it.
It's not much better. It's not much worse, I should say, than Waits creating tomorrow together.
Ooh.
I saw that one. Yeah. Waits creating tomorrow together, and it reminded me of there's a school near where I live, which a few years ago had one of these big, it became an academy and had one of these big rebrands to disguise how underperforming it was. And this huge, great billboard outside, you know, we're now a flashy modern academy, with the slogan in 485-point letters, huge saying, "Tomorrow's future today."
Tomorrow's future today. Wow, not even today's future, but tomorrow's future.
Tomorrow's future today.
Yeah.
and they're teaching our children, these people? I'd have thought, kids, get out of that school. Get out. Go somewhere where they talk properly.
Yeah. They should have gone the whole hog and said tomorrow's future yesterday. And then I'd really be impressed. So I think you've got to pick your slogans carefully. The Kia one? No, not the Kia one. Oh, I can't remember.
I've got two that I like, which...
I just got to say, creating tomorrow together. I can see that somebody sat down and thought...
We're a team, we're creative.
Yeah, tomorrow together. You know, there's sort of an assonance there, and so...
Yes, but it rolls off the tongue. You've got the word, it's suggestion of teamwork, the future, creation. But why not building together? Or I don't know.
Creating
tomorrow together. I mean, that could be Microsoft or Apple. It could be anyone. It could be too many people. Yeah. Now, the my two favourites, I think, Morgan Sindall, creating a better built environment.
Yeah,
which is straightforward, apposite. Not, you know, it's not saying we're brilliant. It's just saying we'll make it a little bit better.
Yeah.
We'll clean your windows. Not aiming too high. Just making it
so. That's
better.
That's your favourite one.
That's my second favourite. My very favourite one of the ones on this list. And I'm hoping people will send more in to us because I'd like to build on this list. I'd like to gather them all up. And I'll give you the slogan first before I reveal who it is. This one is proudly building Britain's future heritage. Now, I like it. It combines, you know, pride in the job. I mean, pride is supposed to be a deadly sin, but I don't think pride in the job is at all a deadly sin. It's a good thing. It's a virtue.
Pride in the job is good.
Proudly building, they're actually saying that they build things, which no one else is admitting to being a builder. Proudly building Britain's future heritage. We've got a little bit Brexit-y in there as well, a little bit Brexit. Yeah. Future, we're looking forward, and heritage, we're looking past.
Yeah, so that's clever.
It's clever, it's clear, it's possibly a bit cuddly, but I don't mind that too much. I like that. And perhaps not surprisingly, because this company is a builder who has built a lot of Britain's heritage buildings and continues to do so, it's Sir Robert McAlpine.
Yeah.
So I like that
So one. They get the prize.
But they get a prize from me. Mace gets a prize from you, clearly.
Mace gets a prize from me, yeah. Well, they get the Razzie, don't they, Mace? But McAlpine gets the Oscar.
The Jules Rimet Trophy. We have. I did invite reader response, and the first one I've got in, we're talking fairly soon after finishing the news content for the website on Wednesday morning. I've got a letter from a reader, says Keltbray is her winner. Smart engineering solutions. It's clear, concise and to the point, and I understand what field of activity is being discussed. So, yeah, that's...
Fair dues.
Nothing wrong with that. I just don't like solutions myself, but this correspondent does, or has no problem.
Yeah, and I wonder who that correspondent works for. Keltbray, perhaps?
Oh.
We don't know, do we? We don't know.
You are so cynical.
We don't know. Well, okay, we haven't got a... Have we got a strap line? Have we got a strap line?
You know, I've got no idea. Let's have a look at our website and see if we make any boast. But probably the... We are the construction search engine. That's, of course, I knew that.
Yes,
which
of course.
Is what the construction index, for people who are not familiar with what our origins are, before you and I came along, it was a...
It was a
directory. It was a search engine for construction services and construction suppliers and construction... products and so on. Not so much products, but services. And the news service only came along a couple of years later, in about 2010, 2011, we started becoming a news provider, and the magazine launched in 2012, 2014. I should know this.
I believe so, yeah. Yeah.
So, yes, we are still the construction search engine, but we are so much more, which is actually, I was having a chat with a marketing person about this very subject, about marketing taglines of companies, which is the reason why, or an argument against having a literal tagline. If you're Tilbury Douglas and your tagline is "We're a building company," okay, it's a bit more than that. But if you take that into a building,
yeah, that doesn't work. I have to say, it might be simple, but it doesn't work.
And then you start sweeping hospital floors and making school meals. Your tagline doesn't extend enough. Whereas if you're Mace, for example, to redefine the boundaries of their ambition, if they want to start making laptops or start feeding school children or start
doing parachute
jumps, whatever business they diversify in, their tagline still represents the essence of who they are.
Yeah.
In a way that if you're too literal and say too much, you risk having to change your tagline when you start diversifying.
Good point.
So your tagline should be, "We're a building company, but we're open to offers.
Do other stuff.
We might change."
No job too big or too small. Well, okay. I'm sure that there's loads of other taglines out there that we've missed. And
yes, do send them in. Can I send them in to our dedicated podcast email address, podcast@theconstructionindex, or our news email address, editor@theconstructionindex.co.uk, and let's try and build up a directory of these taglines, these company slogans. Are we done? Is that any other business, David?
I think so. I can't think anything else snappy to say.
Ooh! I did just want to. I would have saved this to next week, but we're still fortnightly, I'm afraid, folks. Our friendly Bobcat PR man, Mike Isherwood, has been working for Bobcat as their PR agent in the UK for forever, as far as I can see. That Bobcat had put out this press release. I'm sure you'll see it elsewhere, if not on the Construction Index site. This is in near Prague, village of Drasty in the Czech Republic. Bobcat loaders are made in Czech Republic, I believe. So this is on home ground for them. An order of Carmelite nuns has moved to a new convent they're building, or not building. Yeah. They bought an old rundown farmhouse and they're moving in. And in order to sort the place out, they've got themselves some bobcats and they're driving around in these bobcats. There's some photos of nuns driving bobcats. It's a beautiful thing. In the full cowl, the full gear.
Really?
Yeah. No hard hats, I'm afraid.
Well, that's, I'm not sure we should be promoting that, Phil.
I don't think you need to wear a hard hat driving a bobcat. But
it would make for a really useless photograph if they were dressed in construction gear. Much better if they're dressed in their wimples.
But talking of clear English, I mean, all power to Mike Isherwood, who wrote this, I assume he wrote this, or may have been Google translated from the original Czech version. The nuns have been using their Bobcat 773 loader in a basic configuration with a bucket and fitted with pallet forks to transport material about the site. Sister Milada, a member of the order, described the construction work with the Bobcat loader. And she goes on to the nun saying how great it is to drive tractors and Bobcats. I don't know, just amused me.
There's no reason why they shouldn't. I mean, after all, nuns and monks, they're pretty good at turning their hands to practical things. Make a lot of wine and beer. They're good at gardening.
They have to muck in, they're self-sufficient. But yeah. Sister Teresa says she likes the simple intuition operation of the Bobcat loader, which rather suggests that she's tried all the construction machinery out there. The problem is with the Hitachi is that it just doesn't quite. But the Bobcat.
Well, that's some endorsement, I suppose. They've got
the nun boat.
Yeah, the nun boat.
How much fun do the nun have? Bobcat.
Yeah.
Right.
Right, okay.
Over
now. More stories like that as well, please.
Yes. So thank you for listening, people. But for another fortnight, that's all we have from Reconstruction. But from David and I, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.